The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Wednesday, July 28th. I'm Oscar Ramirez from the Daily Dive podcast in Los Angeles, and this is Reopening America. The CDC has issued new guidance saying that everyone should wear masks in certain high-transmission indoor areas, regardless of vaccination status, as well as universal masking for schools. This comes as the Delta variant continues to spread throughout the country. Public health officials are also worried that more variants could be on their way, and the system to sequence the genetic mutations of the virus isn't ready to track them. The U.S. is only sequencing about 10% of all COVID cases, and more needs to be done so that another variant doesn't catch us by surprise. Cynthia Kunz, healthcare reporter at Bloomberg News, joins us for more. Thanks for joining us, Cynthia.
Thanks for having me. I
wanted to talk a little bit about tracking the virus. We're hearing a lot about variants a lot right now. The Delta variant is very concerning, but there are a number of other ones. But one of the things that we've heard about throughout the pandemic really is how bad a job we're actually doing about sequencing the genomes of the virus right now, following it and tracking it as best as we can. You know, in a lot of cases, by the time a variant is already taken hold or is really starting to spread real fast, you know, we're barely coming up on it. We're barely finding the sequencing for it. And part of it is, you know, there's a handful of labs across the country that are working on it, but there's just not enough, at least here in the United States. So, Cynthia, help us walk through some of what we're seeing with this.
Yeah, it's pretty surprising, actually. We have the technology. We do have labs up and ready to go. And there are people, very motivated scientists, willing and interested in doing this work. There just isn't a lot of money for it. And so one of the problems with genetic sequencing is that it's not paid for by insurance. So if you were to go get a COVID test, that might be covered by insurance. But the next step of taking that sample from the lab that tested you into a lab that would then do the genomic sequencing isn't covered. It has to be funded. Basically, typically, it's funded through public health and government money. And public health is chronically underfunded in this country. And this just falls into that bucket. So outside of the public health realm, the other labs that exist to do this work are academic labs and some commercial labs that decided to just do it themselves and pay for it themselves because they can't get the funding. And what was remarkable was in the academic community, I just talked to so many smart people who've been ready to sequence and trying to get money for over a year, but there was just, they weren't getting grants. They weren't getting money because they were getting denied because money was going towards testing instead, or there are people who just didn't recognize the need for surveillance early on. And then, boom, we ended up in the situation this year where we could see, and last year we could see Alpha, the UK a variant, as some were calling it in the beginning, start to take over. And now, of course, we're seeing this with Delta again. So I think it's become really quite clear that we can't waste any time now. We need to unify the efforts that are going on around the country and really work our way into some communities where the sequencing isn't getting done and allocate resources to do this really comprehensively.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the big worry is if that another dangerous variant comes to the United States, we might be at risk of catching it too late. You know, it's going to take hold really quickly and we're not going to be able to catch up again. You mentioned how, you know, a lot of the early money was going into testing and all sorts of that. You actually talk about a lab in Queens, New York, the Pandemic Response Lab. And they started off as a big testing lab. Then everything kind of started dying down now. And then they moved into trying to sequence the genomes of this thing. They kind of just did it on their own. There was no direction for them to do it. They just saw the need for it and were doing it for free for quite a while as well, too.
Yeah, that was really amazing. When I first got acquainted with them, I'd seen their data in an analyst note, and they had already captured that there was a certain type of mutation in a lot of cases in New York City. And that mutation was important because it meant that if a patient had that mutation, if you gave them monoclonal antibodies, which is a type of treatment that's given to certain earlier stage patients, those wouldn't work. Basically, there was a mutation a couple months ago, it was very evident that that was working its way around monoclonal antibodies. So that was very important data. And so I thought, oh, let me reach out to these guys and see what they're doing. And what I came to find was that they were not able to get the money from anywhere else to set up sequencing, but they were so motivated, partly by the scientific connections they had and some of the people they had hired, that they decided to just pay for it out of their own pocket. And so the company that started the Pandemic Response Lab, they're actually like a robotics lab supply company. So they had machines. That was one thing that they had going for them. And their business obviously benefited from some of the ramp up in laboratory testing during the pandemic. So they had some funding to work with, but it's just remarkable that we were relying on a large chunk of New York City sequencing happening through a group that was just doing it because it was the right thing to do.
You mentioned a little bit about why the sequencing is so important, but everybody's kind of goals of using that sequencing data is different. You know, on the federal level, they might have different goals on using that data, and even more, you know, smaller, more granular, you know, state and local governments might have different ideas with that. But tell us a little bit about why it can be helpful, because in the long term, pharmaceutical companies can start planning booster shots, things like that, which we've already seen Pfizer and Moderna saying we might need these. But they need to know which way the virus is mutating so that they can plan for that.
Yeah, so it's interesting. When we talk about national priorities and local priorities, of course, there's this overarching priority of ending the pandemic. But on a national level, there's only so much they can do because we have a system where states run their health departments. So each state has its own health department, and that's why we've had different masking rules or school rules or so on and so forth. We've had a lot of different regulations, so and even in neighboring states. So that's just the way we set up our system here, and that's that creates, you know, some impediments for the CDC to say, go out and tell states to do X, Y, or Z, because states have the opportunity and autonomy to make some decisions themselves. So at the end of the day, the local level, what you really want is you want your sequencing information fast enough so you're getting the data back in time to say, oh, wait a second, something's happening. We have a new mutation in this community. Because it's not as though you discover a mutation, by the way. A scientist wouldn't find one and immediately say, like, oh, we've got X, Y, or Z mutation. What they're discovering is a change in a disease that's a virus that's constantly changing. But they're discovering it enough times to say that, oh, this is significant, because they're also seeing the manifestations in the population of people, say, maybe more people are getting sicker, or they're getting more severely ill when they get sick, or it's a different age patient population. So they can sort of say, okay, this is happening. So this is really important to note, because it underscores why you need more and more sequencing. You can't figure this out with just one or two samples here or there. You need a lot of this going on. But then they can do things like say, okay, we may need to reenact masking measures, or we may need to, I don't know, do school closures when there's a quarantine instead of just quarantining a classroom. I'm just, you know, spitballing here, but there's public health measures that they could use. But the most critical thing is there has to be enough sequencing going on and fast enough, because right now the data is coming back in some places in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, the patient, you know, patient zero and all their contacts may be out of isolation already. And so we're not getting the data fast enough to figure out how to do anything with it that could actually change the course of the pandemic.
How much sequencing are we doing right now in the United States?
So the CDC estimates we're doing about 10%, which is actually a good level from just the strict, there's sort of these public health rules of thumb. Like, we should be doing, some say 5%, some say 10% of all positive samples to know what's going on. The problem with a country as big as the United States, and something that quite a few scientists have pointed out to me, is 10% as a rule of thumb doesn't really get to the heart of the matter. Because what we really need to make sure is happening in the US is that we're getting enough samples from enough different places. So maybe we're sequencing really aggressive in, I don't know, Wyoming is actually a state that stands out that's doing a lot of sequencing, but it's a very small population. So we need to make sure that we're getting sequencing, say, North Dakota is doing sufficient sequencing, or right now I've got Missouri and Arkansas, states that we need to have a lot of sequencing going on because their caseloads are rising really quickly. So saying 10% at the federal level, it's kind of hard to parse because their data that they give out, it's not that clear cut exactly how much they're getting from what jurisdiction. And so in jurisdictions where they're not getting that much sampling data, they're lumping it with other states. And so that becomes harder and harder to interpret in terms of what's going on where.
So the sequencing, the genetic sequencing has not been a big priority for some time, but the Biden administration did announce already some funding for this. I guess it's $1.7 billion in funding to make more of a priority of this. How is that going to be used?
So there are a couple different ways that money is going to be spent. Some of it's going to be spent on the state health departments, which is good. That's a really good way to allocate money because they need more equipment. They need more space. They need to be able to make hires, you know, have long-term bigger staff, et cetera. So that's a good thing. Then there's different chunks of money that are going towards things called centers of excellence. That actually, I think, is really quite meaningful, even though it's a little bit academic. It is partnerships between academic labs and state health labs. So what I found is that academic labs have a ton of capacity, but they have a really hard time getting funding or have had in this crisis. So that's going to be really important. But the CDC said that that money is not for the centers of excellence, not coming until fiscal 2022. And then the last piece is what they're calling a national bioinformatics superhighway. And that's to help make the communications a lot quicker because, see, the goal or the dream here that one scientist said to me, and I think it's really a perfect analogy, is what we want is, say, like the National Hurricane Center style map where you or I could log on and say we had a trip planned to Missouri. And then we take a look at the data and say, like, okay, wait a second. I know what's going on right now. And I know X or Y or Z mutation is there. And I maybe don't want to make that decision. That data should also be in the public's hands. And there's been a bit of a reluctance, I think, to make public data publicly available that quickly. I don't know if it's a reluctance or just a lack of, say, tools that have been built to do that. But I think that's got to be another priority. But the CDC has said that that is a multi-year project. Yeah. So it's probably not coming anytime soon.
Unfortunately, right? A system like that would be super helpful, as you said, just for a planning, purely planning thing, you know, for the public. But hopefully this is becoming more of a priority now, you know. For a lot of people, you know, the vaccines came and we thought the pandemic was getting under control, and the Delta variant is really kind of wreaking havoc in a lot of the unvaccinated population. So it is something that we need to turn our attention to continue monitoring how the virus is mutating. So hopefully we do get a handle on all of that. Cynthia Kunz, healthcare reporter at Bloomberg News, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Oscar Ramirez, and this has been Reopening America. Don't forget that for today's big news stories, you can check me out on the Daily Dive podcast every Monday through Friday. So follow us on iHeartRadio or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.